ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 4 टेक्स्ट नंबर 8। ताम गृहीत्वा चरणयोर् जातमात्रां स्वसुसुतां अपोत्यच्छिलापृष्टे स्वार्थोन्मूलितसौहृदा। Having uprooted all relationships with his sister because of intense selfishness, Kamsa, who was sitting on his knees, grasped the newborn child by the legs and tried to dash her against the surface of a stone. This verse doesn't contain a purport, so we'll read the next verse. Satadhasta samutpatya sadyo devi ambaram gata अदृश्यता विष्णु सायुधाष्ट महाभुज। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिदानंद स्वामी प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन: द चाइल्ड योगमाया देवी द यंगर सिस्टर ऑफ लॉर्ड विष्णु स्लिप्ड अपवर्ड फ्रॉम कंसास हैंड्स एंड अपीयर्ड इन द स्काई एज देवी द गॉडेस दुर्गा विद एट आर्म्स completely equipped with weapons. Purport: Kamsa tried to dash the child downward against a piece of stone, but since she was Yogamaya, the younger sister of Lord Vishnu, she slipped upward and assumed the form of the goddess Durga. The word Anuja, meaning the younger sister, is significant. When Vishnu or Krishna took birth from Devaki, he must have simultaneously taken birth from Yashoda also. Otherwise, how could Yogamaya have been Anuja, the Lord's younger sister? Hare Krishna. I'd like to seek the blessings of all the senior devotees, so that I'll speak something for my own purification. The chapter is entitled The Atrocities of King Kamsa. Actually, Kamsa has already started his atrocities long ago. He smashed the 6 children of Devaki by striking them against the stone. And now, this is the 8th child. The 7th was a miscarriage. And the Srimad Bhagavatam vividly describes how he is doing it. He's on his knees and with all his might he's smashing the child against the stone. It doesn't mention here, but definitely Kamsa was deriving some kind of joy by smashing these children. Because when a living entity becomes too selfish, here it is described, Swarthon Mulita Saurada. And Prabhupada translates Swarthon Mulita as uprooted because of intense selfishness. All his sense of affection for his family members were uprooted because of intense selfishness. Now, when there is intense selfishness, and that intense desire to be the enjoyer, the controller, and the proprietor, the happiness of the living entity gets kind of distorted. Distorted in the sense it becomes unnatural and strange. That is, the distress of another gives the conditioned soul joy. In the Madhya Lila, in his instructions to Sanatana Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu It describes the story of Mrigari the hunter. Once when Narad Muni was walking towards, I think, Prayag, he found animals which were half killed. A deer, a boar. And then he finds that there was a hunter who was actually half killing animals. So he went to the hunter and asked him, why are you doing this? You're not even completely killing the animal. You are making the animal really twist in pain and you're making them suffer. Why is that so? So first Mrigari says that this is what is being taught by my father. But then he admits that this gives me joy. When I see other living entities suffer in this way, it gives me great joy. Also, a few years ago, when there were terrorist attacks on the Taj, the fortunate few who escaped, who were eyewitnesses of the whole massacre, they were saying that as these terrorists were shooting down people, they were laughing. They were enjoying that act of shooting down people. Now, of course, they won't admit that they are enjoying it. They'll philosophize, saying that we are doing it for the pleasure of God. And also Stalin, another striking example, he was asked, what's the greatest joy of your life? And he said that a person who completely trusts me, he comes in front of me and then I take out my revolver and I shoot him. That person is completely trusting me. And then when he sees me shooting him, what is the expression on his face? Seeing that expression is my greatest joy. So we see that how these are unnatural ways of becoming happy actually. Strange that someone is suffering and you become happy seeing them suffer. And in medieval Europe, there was this Zeus sadism. Zeus sadism means there are many such activities. One of them was a group of people used to come to have a nice time during the night with a bonfire in between. And then what they used to do was they used to catch a cat and put it in a net and lower the net onto the bonfire so that the fire will consume the cat, and as the cat used to scream and die and burn, they used to laugh and enjoy the whole activity. Now, a civilized person or a practicing devotee, we shudder at the thought of such ghastly forms of deriving happiness in this world. But the point is, every conditioned soul has this propensity to some extent or the other. The tendency to feel happy when we see others suffer, or when we hear about the suffering of others, a sense of happiness. Bhaktivinoda Thakur very nicely put it in Amara Jivan. Para sukhe dukki. And then he said, para sukhe dukhi. Another's happiness is a source of my distress, and other's distress is a source of my happiness. That is the situation of the conditioned soul. And even as practicing devotees, sometimes when you hear about something bad which happens to another devotee or someone somewhere, and there is an impulse of happiness and joy, a sudden impulse of happiness and joy. And when that happens, it's a very embarrassing thing actually. It's very embarrassing. But it's quite common in the world. You know, we see, even in the local trains, if there is a fight, when there's some fight erupts for no reason, and as if there is a fight, people who have really struggled to get a seat in the train, even they get up to watch it. And on their face is the expression that they're all wishing that let someone be beaten up nicely. You know, they may not express it, but there's a subtle kind of desire. And that poor fellow who is getting beaten up, he's facing so much of negative energy of the entire compartment. Everyone is hoping against hope that he gets beaten up. So this is the sad state of affairs of this world, that basically it is hard-heartedness. It's hard-heartedness. And the whole process of devotional service is to make us soft-hearted. That is, when we see the suffering of others, we suffer. Not simply be neutral. The worst is we become happy. Better than that is we don't feel any emotions. But a Vaishnava is someone who feels sad, who feels sorry, who shares the distress when he sees another's distress. And the entire process of devotional service is meant to make our heart soft. So that when we hear about the distress of others, or when we see others in distress, there is an impulse of feeling sad and distressed. It's not an intellectual exercise. One should automatically feel distressed and one should automatically feel sad. That means the heart has become soft. And this is one proof that the process of Krishna consciousness works. My own little example, few years I've been practicing Krishna consciousness. Before coming to Krishna consciousness, what to do? I should shamelessly admit that I used to enjoy giving distress to others. In some way, little ways, here and there. For example, I had a little niece. I was maybe 9th standard, 10th standard. And I used to find happiness scaring her. At night, I used to tell her that now demons will be coming or Rakshasas will be coming. And I would consider it my success if they felt scared and distressed. Now when I think about that, I feel how bad of me, you know. I can never do that again, as long as I am practicing Krishna consciousness, hopefully. But the point is, this is one way in which we can surely understand that actually the process of Krishna consciousness does work. At least we stop performing heinous activities spontaneously. Now, how does this process of Krishna consciousness work? There's a very nice verse in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Pravishta karna randhrena swanam bhava suroruham dhunoti shamalam krishna salilasya yathasharat. Shukdeva Goswami is describing how this process of devotional service, which begins with hearing, works. Pravishta karna randhrena swanam bhava suroruham. As a devotee starts to hear about Krishna, Krishna in the form of sound vibration enters through the ears and sits on the lotus of that devotee's relationship, eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he cleanses the devotee's heart of all contamination, and the analogy is given, salilasya yathasharat, just as the autumn rains purify reservoirs of water. Prabhupada, in his purport, he explains this phenomena that during the rainy season, what happens is the water in the various reservoirs of water, they become muddy. But in the autumn, when there is rain, immediately all the water in the lakes and other reservoirs of water become very clear. So Prabhupada explains that any other process of purification, it can perhaps, you know, purify a small quantity of water, maybe which is contained in the, he gives the example that municipality water tank. The water contained in the municipality water tank can be purified by some chemical process. But to purify all the waters in all the reservoirs of water, there has to be autumn rain. Similarly, for there to be extensive purification of all living entities, only the process of devotional service will work. What he is trying to say is, other processes can only purify our own hearts, but the process of devotional service can help purify many living entities. Now, how does that happen? He explains that through the process of devotional service, when a devotee is purified, then he automatically starts preaching by spiritual impetus. When there is purification of the heart through the process of devotional service, the heart becomes so soft that one automatically starts feeling for the suffering of others, and one automatically starts preaching as well. It becomes automatic. Because by constitutional position, the devotee becomes para dukkha dukhi. Seeing the distress of others, he can't simply keep quiet. He has to preach. It's a natural consequence. And this soft-heartedness of a devotee, which comes about through the process of devotional service, it's actually very deep. It's very deep, it's not theoretical, and it's complete. It's very deep in the sense that there are people in this world who display soft-heartedness. And that is the basis of piety or philanthropy, that people want to help others in distress. But the soft-heartedness that results from the process of devotional service is very deep. That means it's unobstructed. Prabhupada gives the example in the fifth canto of Jad Bharat. Now Jad Bharat, you know, as the king's palanquin was moving, the three people, the people who are holding the palanquin, they required a fourth person. So they forcibly drew Jad Bharat. And he was made to carry the heavy palanquin. And he was under great distress. And as he was walking, he saw few ants. And he didn't step over them. He didn't step on them. He tried to avoid stepping on them. And Prabhupada is quick enough to note this very important point, that even though Jad Bharat was under distress, he didn't give up his sympathy for the poor ants. When the soft-heartedness is superficial, as soon as the person is under distress, what happens is one can no longer be compassionate towards others. For the conditioned soul, I comes first. As long as I am okay, I am ready to help others. I can feel for the suffering of others, but as long as I am suffering, I am so much preoccupied by my own suffering that I cannot feel for the suffering of others. But Jad Bharat, Prabhupada points out, he was under distress, but he was careful not to cause distress to the ants. That is deep-rooted soft-heartedness. Another classic example is of Parikshit Maharaj, the sixth canto. He is going to die within a few days. But when he hears about the suffering of the souls in hellish planets, immediately he is under distress. And the question he asks Shukdev Goswami is not how I can save myself from Takshak. The question he asks is how these people can be saved from their distressful condition. That is deep-rooted soft-heartedness. That even the one, the devotee is under distress, he doesn't stop being compassionate towards others. And a very wonderful modern-day example is that of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. Some of his disciples are here. During the last days, he was under tremendous pain of cancer, but his entire focus was on elevating the consciousness of whoever came to meet him. This is deep-rooted soft-heartedness. And another thing is, through the process of devotional service, when the heart becomes soft, that soft-heartedness is not simply theoretical. It's not theoretical. When we are new into devotional service, compassion is theoretical. Preaching is more or less a theoretical exercise. We have been told to preach, so we preach. In one of his classes, His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj was telling that preaching is not about giving big classes. It's not about building temples. It's about feeling for the suffering of others. The essence of preaching is compassion. Feeling for the suffering of others. That is the essence of preaching. But when you are new to devotional service, it is more or less theoretical. We hear, what is compassion? Compassion for the soul is the highest. And compassion for the body and the mind. It is compassion for the dress of a drowning man. So compassion for the soul is the highest, we hear. And it's all theoretical. And devotees often are confused about what to do. When I'm showing compassion, am I showing compassion to the body or to the mind or to the soul? There is so much of confusion because the whole concept of compassion is theoretical. Satsurup Maharaj addresses this issue very nicely in his book, Vaishnava Compassion. A very wonderful book. And there he gives a very nice example at how devotees get confused about what is compassion, and they get confused whether this compassion is for the body or the mind or the soul, what am I doing, and they become extra cautious sometimes. He gives an example that sometimes the Bhagavatam speaker, he goes on speaking for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. He's reluctant to stop. Why? Because he feels that showing material compassion, showing compassion to the audience by stopping his lecture is material compassion. So he goes on speaking out of fear that he doesn't want to show material compassion upon his audience. During the WTC attacks, when from certain, some devotees started commenting that when the Twin Towers were brought down, some devotees said that it's a fight between demons. Or some said it's their karma. And then Maharaj, he gave a very nice article in the Back to God magazine how actually devotees should feel pain when there is suffering in this world. But as long as this concept of compassion is theoretical, devotees become confused. The example is of the centipede. The centipede used to dance very nicely. But then someone came and asked the centipede, you know, how do you dance so nicely? So the centipede started analyzing its dance and it forgot how to dance. And perhaps it even forgot how to walk because it started analyzing how its legs starts moving. So similarly, even sometimes devotees, before they come to Krishna consciousness, they have some courtesy of showing kindness. But after coming to Krishna consciousness, they start analyzing so much compassion, whether it's for the body, mind or soul, that they forget to show even preliminary kindness to the people around them. Satsurup Maharaj makes this point, that practicing devotees often neglect to show even preliminary kindness to the people around them, forget about other conditioned souls. But when there is actual purification of the heart, and when the process of devotional service actually works on the heart, and then there is soft-heartedness, then that soft-heartedness is real. It's not simply theoretical. Srila Prabhupada, his soft-heartedness was real. It was not theoretical. There's a nice story that during the last days of Prabhupada's pastimes in this world, he had become very weak. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj says, he used to take care of Prabhupada. So he says that Prabhupada used to start crying even at little impetus, like when he used to see the deities, or when there was kirtan, or hearing about the successful preaching of one of his disciples. He used to instantly start crying, more than he used to do it before. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj says that maybe because of physical weakness, he couldn't control his emotions, and used to readily cry even at small provocations, spiritual provocations. So once during those days, when Ghanshyam Prabhu, later who became Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he came to Prabhupada to give reports about his about his library party. He was giving reports about Eastern Europe. He was placing books in the libraries in Eastern Europe at that particular point of time. So he told Prabhupada, how in Eastern Europe, because of the financial crisis, people are standing in long queues just to get the basic necessities of life. And Prabhupada said, this is predicted that because of atheistic government, people won't even get the basic necessities of life. And he said, they won't even get butter, bread and sugar. And seeing that, Prabhupada had tears in his eyes. Now it's the same Prabhupada who says in the Bhagavad Gita that compassion for the dress of the drowning man is useless. But it is soft-heartedness. Real soft-heartedness beyond the level of theory. So as soon as there is suffering anywhere, whether material or spiritual, there is sorrow and distress. And Prabhupada starts, had tears in his eyes. Another classic example is that of Arjuna. As soon as he saw the armies, as soon as his chariot was placed in between the two armies, he had tears in his eyes and his body began to shiver. And Prabhupada, in the purport, he actually glorifies Arjuna. He says that Arjuna is crying out of compassion. This is the characteristic of a pure devotee. The characteristic of a pure devotee is soft-heartedness, and he cannot tolerate the distress of others. So the soft-heartedness that results through the process of devotional service is first of all very deep, it's not superficial, and secondly it is it's not theoretical. And the third thing is, it is complete. It's complete in the sense that In this world, if someone is soft-hearted, his soft-heartedness is exhibited to a certain group of people only. Maybe to the people of the same community, or at the most to humanity, or even if it extends to the animal kingdom, it is perhaps to endangered species, or maybe to the dogs, or dogs alone. But the compassion and the soft-heartedness of a pure devotee whose soft-heartedness has resulted through the process of devotional service, it is complete. That it extends to all living entities, wherever they are, whoever they might be. One example is, of course, that of Parikshit Maharaj. Now he is sitting on planet Earth and is singing and crying for people in hellish planets. Prabhupada gives an analogy to explain this phenomena in a purport in the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He says, just like parts of the body, see, when any part of the body is diseased or is in some kind of difficulty, immediately and spontaneously the other parts of the body come to rescue. Suppose someone throws a stone at our face. Immediately the hand covers the face and maybe the knees bend to dodge the stone. Every part of the body, every other part of the body spontaneously and immediately they come to the rescue of that particular diseased part or the part that is being attacked. Similarly, a pure devotee's compassion spontaneously and naturally flows to any living entity who is in distress in any part of the world. Whether that person belongs to the same community, same species, or whatever it might be. Because the pure devotee is connected to Krishna, he sees the connection of Krishna with every other living entity. Now, Satsvarup Das, Satsvarup Maharaj, in his book, Vaishnava Compassion, he speaks about this topic of compassion in a very nice way. And towards the end, he gives a practical way by which we can develop compassion. He recommends the path of prayer. First of all, he says that prayer, it is all pervasive. Our chanting is prayer, or our study of the Srimad Bhagavatam is prayer. Everything has to be done in a prayerful mode. And then he says, if we get to the heart in prayer, we will also find the soul's natural compassion. I cannot spell out how that happens, but as we advance in Krishna consciousness, devotional qualities also become established in our character. It cannot be analyzed how exactly it happens. So Maharaj is telling that I cannot spell out how it happens, but if we lead a life of prayer, then the natural quality of the soul to be compassionate naturally emerges out. He's speaking in connection with the tendency of wanting to show compassion, neglecting a life of internal development through prayer. Many times people feel that preaching goes against a life of internal development in the form of praying and sadhana. So here he's trying to say that only if we lead a life of prayer, a life of internal development, and only when we actually connect ourselves to the natural compassion of the soul, can we actually do justice to our external activity of preaching. At the same time, this praying or wanting to intensify our sadhana has to be done in the right attitude. Sasurup Maharaj says, he quotes Thomas Merton. Thomas Merton expressed this well in his own life, Maharaj writes. He craved to enter the solitude of prayer, not to escape the world, but to bring the world into his solitude. This is what Thomas Merton said. He craved to enter the solitude of prayer, not to escape the world, but to bring the world into his solitude. So prayer should be done with the desire to develop genuine compassion so that we can actually help other living entities. Because that is the essence of preaching. Preaching is not simply about external activities. It's about feeling for the suffering of others. And he concludes this section of prayers, Satsurup Maharaj concludes this section on prayers with a beautiful statement. He says that even after a lifetime of prayer, if we increase our kind-heartedness to the people around us, even by a small fraction, that is no small feat. That's actually a great accomplishment. If through a lifetime of prayer, if we actually start feeling for the suffering of others, rather than start feeling happy hearing about the suffering of others, that is a great achievement, Satsurup Maharaj says. So when I read this Kamsa showing atrocities upon the children of Devaki, these were some thoughts that came to my mind. Thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Prabhu, for pouring out your heart. I think this is a result of years of listening right at the lotus feet, sitting at the lotus feet of the speaker, like a chataka bird and drinking the nectar from everyone. So, these three points that you brought out, one is true compassion is deep and it's also complete and not theoretical, actually practical. Every time I hear about compassion, I always get this question, which partly you have answered. Maybe if you can throw more light since we have time. And that is, how do we discriminate between genuine compassion and weak-heartedness? Because sometimes a weak-heartedness is also misunderstood unless when it is exposed. So whatever we are showing to others, is it out of just, you know, there are people who just start crying for everything, you know. One lady I know, she saw a crow come and eat the two little eggs which had just hatched of a pigeon. And for 3 days she wouldn't eat food. She was really moved by that. She couldn't see and she was asking me, should I keep quiet thinking that's their karma or, you know, things like that. So, I felt it was partly, you know, hrudaya daurbalyam. But then I was thinking, that's also natural. You really feel like crying. So, in any activity that we do, which we may feel it's arising out of compassion, how, or at least how do we make sure that it's actually genuine compassion and not some kind of weakness of the heart? What is the line?
I seek your blessing to answer this question. Of course, this soft-heartedness of feeling when there is suffering, that's actually conducive for devotional service. And actually that is required. That soft-heartedness is required for not simply for preaching, even to advance in devotional service, actually, in one sense. Because unless one is soft-heartedness, how can one appreciate the sacrifice of the acharyas? Prabhupada had 3 heart attacks, he had seasickness, and despite all this trouble, he went to America just to give Krishna consciousness to all of us. So if we say that actually it was the body, Prabhupada's body had 3 heart attacks, and Prabhupada is transcendental, he is Mahabhagavat, pure devotee, how can these things affect him? If we say that, then we are no longer able to appreciate the sacrifice of Prabhupada. But if you are soft-hearted, we feel, oh, Prabhupada underwent so much of trouble for all of us. Or the Lord Himself comes to this material world. One could say the Lord is transcendental, but the Lord actually comes to this material world. And then we can appreciate the kindness of the Lord. So soft-heartedness is required, not simply for preaching, but at every stage of devotional service. To advance in devotional service and to appreciate the sacrifice of the Lord and the Lord's devotees, one needs to be soft-hearted. And even to begin devotional service, soft-heartedness is a wonderful qualification. Many of the initial disciples of Prabhupada in New York City, they came to help Srila Prabhupada out of soft-heartedness. They wanted to help an old man. The old man is wanting to do something, and let us help him. So soft-heartedness is, of course, a wonderful qualification. To not just preach, but even to start devotional service and even to advance in devotional service. At the same time, one should know that soft-heartedness hasn't become quote-unquote real unless we really go through the rigorous process of devotional service. It hasn't matured. That soft-heartedness hasn't matured unless we go through the process of devotional service. Because when there is mature soft-heartedness, simultaneously there is someone who is at that level of soft-heartedness and compassion, a pure devotee of the Lord, he is also in direct contact with the Super Soul. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. Prabhupada gives that example of someone who was crying for parathas somewhere in Lucknow. He had typhoid. So sister or the brother was actually soft-hearted. Sort of soft-heartedness, that paratha was given. And the person died. Now that is incomplete soft-heartedness. So the soft-heartedness which is resulting from pure devotional service, that is combined with a sharp intelligence that is powered by the Supreme Lord Himself, of strong determination of how to help that person, really help that person. And with complete understanding of what is the scene. For example, Narad Muni, in this episode of Mrigari, when he sees animals half dead, he comes to Mrigari and the first thing he says is, he starts the conversation by saying that, you please completely kill them. If we pause the story at this particular point of time, at this point, we feel that, you know, Narad Muni is not really soft-hearted. But he is soft-hearted, but his soft-heartedness is powered by a sharp intellect. Blessed by Krishna, by which he knows how to apply that soft-heartedness for helping the living entities in a practical way. And it's remarkable that he starts the conversation by saying that you completely kill the animals. But in the same conversation towards the end, he convinces Mrigari to break his bow. Same conversation. Now, within a few dialogues, Narad Muni had actually implemented his soft-heartedness to benefit the animals. So I would say that when the compassion is mature, that compassion is combined with complete understanding, a complete realization of Krishna being the fountainhead and the originator of all living entities, and it is combined with a strong intelligence, dadame buddhi yogam tam, by which we can actually help, do practical help without causing harm to one party. Completely help. Otherwise, mundane soft-heartedness, like in the case of Shobari Muni, he tried to help the fishes, but he ended up causing greater harm to the fishes because it was incomplete, it wasn't mature. So mature compassion, I would say, will combine with direct contact with the super soul. That's my limited understanding. Yeah, Prajwari Prabhu has something.
I don't know if this is an addition to the point. Like, you know, Bharat Maharaj was also compassionate. He saved the deer. But we say that it is that was very good. That soft-heartedness was very good that he saved the deer. But we say it is weak-hearted because he allowed that compassion to affect his sadhana. So he was not, he stopped chanting and he was taking care of the deer so much. And then he would justify it also by saying that, oh, I may be neglecting my sadhana, but that is okay because, you know, this deer has to be taken care. So I was thinking maybe soft-hearted is good, but if it is affecting our spiritual activities, then that is no discrimination and we are losing track. So maybe this lady is crying for the pigeon eggs being eaten by the crow, but if she's pakka in her sadhana, every day she's chanting, doing all the regulative principles, chanting, then that's healthy. So she may be crying, but that's soft-hearted is there, but her discrimination is not gone. Maybe this is, I was thinking like this.
Thank you. Hey, the time is sore. Thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.